Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Football Hour with Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen. Wrapping up the week that was with sound from the locker room, highlights from the game, and much more. And now, here's Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen.
Welcome in. It's the Football Hour here on a Tuesday on 95.7 The Game. Mark Grandy, Kyle Madsen with you. I was out this weekend. You didn't hear me on overtime, but Kyle and Sterling held it down on Sunday. I was out yesterday as well. That's why you're hearing the Football Hour on a Tuesday here on 95.7 The Game. Generally, you'll hear the Football Hour every day after the Niners game, 6 to 7 p.m. here on 95.7 The Game. But we had to adjust today. But it was a rough week for the 49ers. Kyle, again, final score over the Cardinals, 24-23. The Cardinals come into Santa Clara and get a win on a hot day in the South Bay. A frustrating weekend. It's kind of becoming an all-too-familiar story. The Niners have already blown two double-digit fourth-quarter leads to division rivals, and the only reason this isn't a total S-show, Kyle, is because the rest of the division and the rest of the conference is also kind of an S-storm. The Niners could go into Seattle in 2 days, win that game, and still be in first place in the division, although this team feels like the farthest thing from a first-place team right now, given how they're playing and how they looked on Sunday.
That's what's so weird, right, is the juxtaposition between how abominable that loss was on Sunday, with the fact that that's their second such loss of the year to a division opponent. They're 0-3 in the NFC. They're 0-2 in the NFC West. Their defense is in shambles. They've got a bunch of dudes banged up. And also, they're a win away from leading the division. So it's like, so it's trying to balance, right? The sky is it's not falling. It's definitely cracking, though. But at the same time, it's like, yo, there's a whole gang of duct tape right there to get everything patched up and ready to go to make a playoff run. So that's what I think today needs to be about, is spinning this forward to how do they climb out of this little rut that they're in? Because it's they're definitely in a rut. I heard Willard just talking on Willard and Dibbs about how, you know, they're a couple of plays away from being 4-1. I'm right there. Totally agree. It hasn't been a total disaster.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that game against the Rams shouldn't have been close. The game against the Cardinals shouldn't have been close. And I think we'll see them play better football down the stretch, but they're teetering right now for sure. But the door is still open. I'm sick of being so upset about Sunday. The door is open to, like you said, lead the NFC West after Thursday night. Like, you can go into Sunday as the leaders in the division. That's crazy. So I'm trying to maintain a little bit of an air of optimism here.
Yeah, there's a balance for sure. But and while I think Willard's right, and you brought it up, they are a couple plays away from being 4-1, and whatever word you want to use, they should be 4-1. They easily could be 4-1. Whatever, you're probably not wrong. The conversation, though, Kyle, if this team was 4-1 and the games largely played out the way that they did, aside from, you know, maybe Ronnie Bell makes that catch against the Rams week 3,
yeah,
and you know, Jordan Mason doesn't fumble and they they make a short field goal or they get into the end zone and they seal the deal there. Or Purdy doesn't throw that last interception. They go down and score to kind of walk off with the win. They would be 4-1, yeah, and we'd obviously be looking at this in a much different light. But the conversation would still be, well, they got to figure it out because now you got the Seahawks on the road Thursday night. Then you got the Chiefs. You got the Bills. You got the Packers. You got all these. You got the Lions later in the year. You've got all these good teams coming up. So obviously, you would rather be 4-1 than 2-3. I'm not saying that, but even if they were 4-1, Kyle, and the wins were kind of still felt like really bad performances, the larger point would still stand that this team does not feel like a 4-1 team. They're not playing like a 4-1 team, and the only reason they were a 4-1 team, this is even if those losses were wins, was because they're playing also really bad and injured teams. Like the Cardinals, better than last year, not a very good football team. The Rams, especially, at least when the Niners played them, a very bad football team, and you still managed to lose that game, or in our little pretend game over here, you found a way to win. So you want to be 4-1, no doubt. But even if you were, Kyle, you would still have signs that this team isn't anywhere near as good as they were last year.
Yeah, man, and that's kind of the whole thing. So let's just go to the world where Jake Moody makes that 52-yard field goal against the Rams.
Yeah.
And they go on to win. And let's go to the world where Jake Moody doesn't get hurt against the Cardinals and they kick a couple of extra field goals and they win that game. Like let's just go there.
Okay, let's do it.
The red zone offense, still a problem. The pass rush, still a problem. The linebacker play, still a problem. Safety stuff, still a problem. Injury stuff, still a problem. But we'd be able to look at it and go, man, all these issues and they're still grinding out wins. Like, they've left themselves a really wide margin of error because the goal with this team is not, it shouldn't be playoffs. The goal is not to be 9-8, 10-7, and sneaking in as the seventh seed, right? Like, the goal is one seed Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And to get there now, their margin of error has basically been completely eliminated. And instead of going, man, look at this gritty team. They're not great yet, but they're going to start playing better and they're figuring it out. I totally still think they're going to start playing better. I think they'll make a trade or two. And the team we're looking at now is going to be pretty inferior to the team we're looking at in mid to late November. But the problem is you start to at least dust off the panic button because at 2-3, you can't lose that many more games if you're talking one seed or if you're talking division.
I mean, even if you're talking playoffs, honestly.
Yeah, man. Like, yeah, you go lose to Seattle, now you're 2-4. Certainly, you don't feel good about playing Kansas City or Dallas. And then you go into your bye week at, let's say, 3-5. You can lose, what, two games the rest of the year? In a gauntlet of a schedule? Like, that's, they're putting themselves in a really tough spot. But we've seen him do this before. Kyle Shanahan said yesterday in his conference call that he doesn't think that past years of falling behind in the schedule early, 3-5 to start one year. I think they were 3-4 to start another year. He doesn't think that helps, but I think it can, or I think at least having the same leadership in the locker room can help keep the ship from totally capsizing. But man, it's really hard to pick out things that you love about how this season has started, even if they were 4-1.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, yeah, Kyle talking about how past year's examples of coming back from slow starts doesn't matter. Okay, that's fair. Like, what happened 3, 4, 5 years ago has no impact on what's going to happen. But at a certain point, it also becomes just a numbers game. And we can look at past examples. You mentioned a year when they started 3-5. They also were 2-4 that same year. That was 2021, when they began with wins in Detroit and in Philadelphia, then lost 4 in a row to Green Bay, Seattle, Arizona, and the Colts. You win in Chicago, then you lose at home to the same Arizona Cardinals team. That was when Colt McCoy was playing quarterback that year.
Oh, that's right. That's when Drake Kirkpatrick got railroaded by Eno Benjamin.
Exactly. Yeah. Most people out there listening, who are either of those people, we don't really know who those people are. That's what that game was. It was a bunch of nobodies for the Cardinals coming in and running over one specific nobody for the Niners, but other than that, a Niners team that had a ton more talent than that Cardinals team. My only point is not that that team is equal to this team, and that was a Jimmy Garoppolo team with Trey Lance drama and all of that. That was a weird season. But my only point is, you get to a point where you're 2-4, you get to a point where you're 3-5, you have to almost nearly run the table to make the playoffs. Like, it's just the numbers of what your record is going to be in order to get into the playoffs. You're going to have to win at least 9, probably 10 games. Do you remember the final two games of that regular season? The Niners needed to win them both to get into the playoffs, and the final game was against the division winner, the Rams, in L.A. You win an overtime. You came from down by double digits in the second half, and you win that game. Like, it is possible. But let's not forget how difficult that was for that team to get through, and then they managed to fight through and get all the way back to the NFC Championship game. But if you're telling me that the fight the Niners had to go through just to make the playoffs that year had no impact on what happened in the NFC Championship game, I'm calling you crazy. Like, the Niners are already beaten up right now. Now you're going to have to play postseason-like games towards the end of the season just to make the postseason? That's not easy. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, because they're only 2-3, and a win on Thursday means they are currently first place in the NFC West. I think the larger point is you just need a gigantic sense of urgency right now. And maybe the biggest thing for me as a observer of 49ers football is I just haven't felt really a lick of urgency from the vast majority of the roster. And while there is still plenty of time, that's entirely fair. I just would like to see quite a bit more. And if I don't see that on Thursday, that's when I officially start to get worried, not just about the division, but about this team doing anything and making the postseason, period.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, they have to go win on Thursday. And from the literal definition of a must-win game, right? and I know that you guys on 95.7 will talk about this all week, but or through the next couple of days, I guess. But like, a literal must-win game is if you lose, your season's over, right? But effectively, you can't go to 0-3 in the division, 0-4 in the conference, and expect to go to the playoffs still. I will say, though, that 2021 team had, I believe, a significantly better defense than this year's team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about some defense stuff with you, especially after Robert Saleh's firing.
Yeah, let's do it.
The big difference to me offensively is A, at some point they're supposed to get Christian McCaffrey back, which would obviously be a huge lift, but B, Brock Purdy is just so many levels better than Jimmy Garoppolo from a extending plays and creating offense standpoint, pushing the ball down the field, that I still feel like there's a run there. And that's the thing that's kind of keeping me from, like, flipping the spread and being like, this season's over, this season's done, they're
cooked. Panic mode.
Yeah, yeah, man. Like, even if they go to 2-4, it's obviously bad. You can't be doing that. But if you told me they did that, if you told me they went to 3-5, went into the bye at 3-5, and then went, what would that be? They have 9 games left after that, 8-1 the rest of the way. Like, my jaw wouldn't hit the floor. And it all comes back to number 13 for me. That's just kind of the confidence I have in him, even though he was really bad on Sunday. But either way, bottom line is you don't want to put yourself in that position where you're having to play basically perfect football down the stretch.
Yeah, no doubt. You don't want to do that, and you're going to need more from your defense. And you mentioned the big story around the NFL earlier today, and it was a big story for a lot of Niner fans because you're missing that kind of fire and intensity from your defense the last two seasons. And the guy that kind of brought that about on this Niners team just got fired as the head coach of the New York Jets. That's Robert Saleh. You remember him. Haven't seen it a lot with the Jets, because why would you? They've been largely bad when he's been their head coach, although maybe treated a little bit unfairly, Robert Saleh was. How would you expect anyone to be successful with the quarterbacks that he's had before this year, and now he's only given 5 games? A little rough, in my opinion. But from the Niners' perspective, Kyle, you're dealing with Steve Wilks last year, and we know that whole fiasco. And now you have Nick Sorensen, a first-time defensive coordinator this year, and through 5 games, it's been largely pretty similar to what happened last year, and last year was fire offense worthy. Like, that is what happened. He got fired for how he and the defense performed last season, and so far this year, it hasn't been great either. I'm not so sure the 49ers I don't know, are... I don't think Robert Saleh is walking through that door this year, and he's going to be, you know, promoted to, hired and promoted to defensive coordinator midseason. Maybe it's something that happens in the coming offseason. And I'm not so sure, even if you get Robert Saleh in here, that it makes that big of a difference for this one season, Kyle.
That's it.
But where I also understand Niner fans and their desire to maybe make a switch is... There, it's what we're talking about. There just hasn't been a ton of urgency from almost everyone on this roster, maybe specifically on the defense, everyone other than Fred Warner. And you see, you think back to when Robert Saleh was the DC and him on the sidelines screaming, and he's got veins popping out of his neck and his forehead, and he's headbutting dudes, and he's not even wearing a helmet. And when his guys come over there after getting an interception, he's almost shoving them to the ground. Not that that is absolutely what you need out of your DC, but that energy kind of feels like what the Niners are missing right now, and it kind of makes some logical sense to want that reintroduced to this roster. One, I'm just not so sure it's not going to happen, and two, I'm not so sure that that reintroduction would make that big of a difference in what we're seeing on the field, because the players at a certain point just got to play better football, Kyle.
That's it, dude. That's I understand what you're saying. I understand the idea that, hey, fired up defensive coordinator equals fired up players who are playing harder, ergo you're going to have a better defense. The 49ers' problem goes so far beyond Nick Sorensen this year defensively, though. They just don't have the guys. They just don't. I had massive questions about their defensive line going into this year. Leonard Floyd has not been good. He has not been the player they were hoping to get. They signed Yeter Gross-Matos and hoped that he could be that Charles Omenihu type of player, right? He's rushing from the inside. He's rushing off the edge. He's hurt now. He's on IR. Javon Hargrave, who's supposed to be their second best pass rusher and their best interior pass rusher, out. He's done for the season. And now they're relying on Jordan Elliott, another defensive tackle they signed this offseason, dealing with a knee injury. At linebacker, Devondre Campbell, I always talk about being around the football, and especially like during the draft when you're watching defensive players. How often does that player finish the play around the football? Devondre Campbell's around the football a lot, but in the wrong way. He's behind the football all of the time.
He's around the football, late, but never at the football.
Yes, he is in the general. He's in the area code of the football, kind of vaguely. He's kind of on the county line. But he's always like trailing. It's never, wow, what a play by Devondre Campbell. It's like, oh, look, Devondre Campbell coming in late. And so that's a massive issue. I don't, as the season goes on and we talk about like players being fired up and that energy and that urgency, I think Dre Greenlaw, his absence is just way bigger than I thought it was going to be. I didn't think that Devondre Campbell was necessarily going to be the answer at linebacker, but I just think his attitude, the toughness that he plays with, he was good for one borderline late hit per game, right? And that's obviously not how you want to go about your business, but that's that verve that he played with, that intensity that he played with. It feels like that's just missing. And then you go to Treverius Ward, who's apparently dealing with a knee thing, and they're still trying to figure out their third cornerback spot, and you've got a bunch of safeties who are young and overrunning plays and misdiagnosing things and biting on fakes. And it's just, you're looking at this and going, hey, Bill Belichick is not fixing this.
No.
Like, there's just not enough high-quality players here, and that's a way bigger issue, I think. So you can bring in Robert Saleh all you want. You can bring in a DC who's going to yell and scream all you want. I don't think it's fixing what ails the 49ers defensively. They just don't have the dudes. And we've talked about this for 3 weeks now. Like that's the problem right now. It's personnel way more than the coaching to me.
Yeah, I mean, well, just look at the defense. And on all three levels, you are consistently featuring dudes that just simply are not good enough. And this isn't like they're not performing up to their level. These guys just aren't good enough. And it's nothing against Jordan Elliott. And it's nothing against Kevin Givens. And it's nothing against Kalia Davis. A lot of those guys are playing major snaps. One of those guys will start every single week for the rest of the year, unless they make a trade and bring in someone that that is not currently on the roster. You look at linebackers. You mentioned Devondre Campbell. If the Niners are in base defense, that also means Demetrius Flanagan Foles on the field. Apologies to both those guys. I'm not sure you are starting NFL linebacker qualities. And then you go to the defense. You go to the defensive backfield. Now you're without Talanoa Hufanga for at least another 4 weeks. By the way, you could argue that might not be the worst thing. He hasn't been playing very good for the 49ers, but that's also featuring a guy like Isaac Yiadom relatively consistently, at the very least when you're in nickel. And these days, the Niners are in nickel quite often. On all three levels of the defense, you just have guys that frankly aren't starters in the NFL. And, you know, I don't expect this Niner team to be able to put out a Pro Bowl roster every single week and every single season. That's not realistic. But when you have those kind of guys at every level of your defense, you're going to need your other guys, your stars, to be otherworldly. And maybe aside from Fred Warner, two or three of the five weeks, he hasn't been. You can't expect him to be otherworldly every single game. Nick Bosa was awesome week four against the Patriots. Hasn't been bad the other weeks, but hasn't been DPOY Nick Bosa. And you mentioned Mooney Ward. He's probably had his best stretch as a 49er these first 5 weeks of the season. So some of your starters just simply aren't good enough, Kyle, and your stars aren't playing up to their level consistently enough to make up for some of those shortcomings elsewhere, and that's a recipe for being an average defense, and that's where the Niners are right now.
Well, especially if you're going to run a defense that marries the defensive line to the secondary, right? Isaac Yiadom, just let's take him for a second. The Niners' nickel corner, their third corner, he's fine. If you have a really, really good pass rush, if your pass rush is flying around, getting home, affecting quarterbacks, getting them off their spots, Isaac Yiadom is fine.
Kind of like when Akello Witherspoon was playing major snaps for the Niners.
That's a great comp. Akello Witherspoon, Emmanuel Mosley, how many just random corners have just kind of come through and been okay for the 49ers, right? So you can do that if you have an awesome pass rush. Or you can go the other way and have the Niners defensive line, but then you need a really, really dominant secondary.
Yeah.
So it's not Isaac Yiadom by himself or Jordan Elliott by himself or Kevin Givens by himself or whoever. Like, it's not those guys necessarily in starting spots. It's the accumulation of those guys. When I was with Willard and Dibbs, we had Herm Edwards one time, and he talked about backup players in the NFL. And he's like, they're NFL players, but they're backups for a reason. They can play in a small role. They can play a rotational role. They can even start a game. But when you're having to start backups 4, 5, 6 games in a row over an extended period of time, eventually they're going to get exposed. And that's a little bit what it feels like is happening with the 49ers, as you just laid out, in all three levels right now. You can do it in one. You can have it in one spot. You might be able to get away with it in two spots, depending. But when it's, two defensive line spots, a key secondary spot, or a key cornerback spot, one or two safeties, one or two linebackers, now you're going to run into a real issue. Real quick on the Saleh thing, I want to amend what I said. If Nick Sorensen loses the locker room, where his message is just falling on deaf ears, and the defense is just not playing hard. That was one of the issues with Steve Wilkes last year. Week 8 against the Bengals. Just effort, terrible. Yeah. NFC Championship game. They had effort problems. Like, that to me comes down to coaching. So
Chase Young. Yeah.
Boy. If that starts, watching him on the Saints last night, really frustrating. He's just an annoying player to watch. Not a fan. But if Nick Sorensen loses the locker room and they're just not playing hard. Okay, then let's talk about moving on. But right now, the Niners' issues run deeper than that to me.
Yeah, and we're spending a lot of time here on the defense. Let me just ask you this point, Blake. offense, defense, special teams. Rank them from most problematic to least problematic, because I'm not so sure that that defense is anywhere near the top of that list right now either. It's just easy to point out because we're so used to such a high standard with the 49ers. Yeah. But if I were to rank, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the offense at times has been pretty good, but special teams has been so terrible. I get that special teams is a much less impactful, you know,
area. It should be.
It should be, but it hasn't really been for the 49ers. I don't think the defense has been the worst unit for the 49ers, though, this whole season. Like, I mean, the defense was not bad on Sunday. I mean, they gave up big chunks on the ground in the second half, but it's not like this team is giving up 30 points consistently.
No, and that's why I think this is so frustrating, is you can't point to one thing. If their run defense was just terrible, but their offense is good, pass defense good. If it was just like, okay, they need to find somebody to plug up the run game. But it's a little bit of everything. It's a sprinkle of everything. And yeah, we can keep going over this. But if I'm ranking this, it's special teams one. Because like you said, that shouldn't be game-changing. But they've had a game-changing punt block, game-changing punt return, a game-changing injury. Like, it's been a huge issue for them. And a fumble against the Patriots on the kickoff. Isaac Arendo led to their only touchdown of the game. So it's special teams one, the sunny side of Levi's Stadium two. three, I think I'm still going defense above offense.
Yeah.
But if we're breaking things down, the 49ers red zone offense specifically would go up a little bit higher on that list of problems.
Yeah, I'm with you. That is a big, big concern for this team moving forward. We can get into that. We can get into some other things on the offensive side of the football coming up next here on the Football Hour as well. That's Kyle Madsen. I'm Mark Randy with you here on 95.7 The Game. We got 30 more minutes to get to breaking down everything Niners as they fall in Week 5 to the Cardinals. Final score 24-23. More Football Hour coming up next on 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Now back to the Football Hour with Mark Randy and Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Football Hour continues here on 95.7 The Game. Mark Randy, Kyle Madsen with you as we continue to sort through the 49ers' loss in Week 5 at home to the Arizona Cardinals, 24-23. Talking a lot about the defense, Kyle, but as we just talked about before we went to that quick break, obviously there is reason to be upset and frustrated at the defense for, but it's not as if this is the worst defense in the NFL, and there's plenty of blame to go around. And you could talk a little bit about maybe what was happening offensively in this game and maybe some overall trends for this entire season. First of all, the second half, it's kind of odd because they didn't score a single point in the second half. But you go back and watch that game, they're moving the ball pretty darn well the entire game. And a big part of it, of course, is not having a kicker. But also, even if they were settling for field goals and getting 3 points, even if they did use those 3 points to turn them into a win, I wouldn't feel all that confident about the offense considering what they have been in the red zone. You also talk about some of the, I don't know, I thought Kyle Shanahan, it was interesting. He threw the ball a lot on Sunday. I wasn't really prepared for that or expecting that, especially when they led by double digits for a lot of that football game. That was weird to me. I just don't want to get into a point, Kyle, where we spend so much time talking about the defense as if this is the only reason the team is 2-3, because at the very least on Sunday, the offense deserves a pretty big share of the blame pie because they didn't score in the second half, and I thought there were some interesting decisions play calling wise as well in the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, to be clear, I'm totally with you. The defensive stuff, it's more the clarity that they're not going to be the defense that they've been over the last few years, and just their inability to get like that key stop. In the Minnesota game, needed one stop at the end, couldn't get it. In the Arizona game, needed one stop at the end, couldn't get it. Against the Rams, needed one stop, can't get it. It's like that's where the frustration is with the defense. But I'm totally with you, man. Their red zone offense this year, is it they've turned 40.9% of their red zone trips into touchdowns. 40.9%. Last year, that would have been 31st in the NFL, ahead of only the Zach Wilson Jets.
And last year, they were best in the NFL at that.
Correct. Like 67.2% or whatever it was. They've dropped 27% since last year. This is such a source of frustration, because it's like there's no way that's just Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, he's awesome, but he's not worth 27%.
Well, if he was their only guy, if this was the Panthers, right? And it's like you remove Christian McCaffrey, now it's Chuba Hubbard and like Deontay Johnson and Adam Thielen running around.
Yeah.
Okay, I see the difference. But it's like this offense still loaded. Jordan Mason's good. Right? Like Jordan Mason's not a scrub.
Unfortunate fumble, but he's been awesome this year. Yes.
Yeah, tough look for sure, but otherwise he's been great. How are they not punching the ball in? It is maddening, dude. It's a tipped pass against the Vikings at the goal line on a 4th-and-2. It's a defender coming off the edge and forcing like the Purdy throw to Kittle in the red zone, where the throw was a little bit high and it kind of carried Kittle out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a staple play in the Niners offense. And they missed the throw, whether it was because of how the defense played or because Purdy got rid of it late or whatever happened. They just missed that throw where it's typically a walk-in touchdown. And it's like all these little things they just can't get right. And you mentioned the play calling. It ties these two things together. They get a 1st-and-8 against Arizona. 1st-and-goal at the 8. They go handoff to Isaac Garendo. Okay. Then they go pass to George Kittle that took him out of bounds.
Yep.
And then they go pass again on 3rd down on 3rd-and-goal from the 2. And then they kick a 20-yard field goal on 4th down.
Yeah, I wanted run on 3rd-and-goal from the 2. If you don't get it, run it again.
Run it again. You have Jordan Mason, who's 2nd in the league in rushing yards.
And always breaks like a tackle or 2.
Gets a yard. It is so rare that he goes backwards and then fumbles. But it is so rare that he goes backwards on a play. How are you not just doing that twice?
Yeah.
I'm not in the fire Kyle Shanahan boat. I'm not going to hang out with those people.
Absolutely.
They're
going to
go over there and party by themselves. And that's fine. They can do that. I'm not going to begrudge anybody who is there. But it's things like that that fuel that fire. It's those type of play calls and that type of decision making where it's like, man, what? It's not that hard. Like, football's not that hard, dude. You have a big running back. Go run it in the line twice. And punch it in.
Yeah.
Because it feels like that's what every other team does.
Yeah, a lot of the times. And generally, it works, unless I guess you're the New York Giants and you're at the goal line and you run it and you fumble it, and then the Seahawks pick it up and run it 100 yards the other way. That's just one example where it didn't work. You would hope that wouldn't happen with Jordan Mason. That was interesting. That was the moment where I thought, all right, we're getting a little too big brain here, Kyle. Like, just do what you're best at, and what you're best at is between the tackles, run the ball, get a yard on 3rd-and-goal from the 2, and then run it again. And then you also have moments where You have unfortunate turnovers, obviously. You had the Jordan Mason fumble, and that was in the fourth quarter. That doesn't happen. You probably win the game, although you don't have 100%. A field goal kicker, so you never really know. But you probably win the game. At the very least, you kill a lot of clock, and you make it more difficult on Kyler Murray and the Cardinals to do anything if they even get the ball back. You also have, as you mentioned, that Brock Purdy miss to George Kittle around the 5-yard line on the left side near the end zone. You had, this was not the same drive, but I think it might have been in the third quarter, where Juwan Jennings was open down the right sideline running towards the end zone, and Purdy, one of his worst throws of the game, throws well behind him. Jennings somehow actually makes the catch, but can't get his feet in bounds. It was an incredible catch by Jennings, but that's a throw that Purdy, for the most part, has made. He missed that one, and then you have his own turnovers, and that's how you turn what was largely a game where you moved the ball really well. Like, what are the numbers? Offensively in this game, the 49ers averaged 6.1 yards per game, yards per play.
It's a good number.
That's not like it was 9 per play in the first half and then 3 in the second half. No, it was like relatively even from half to half. Maybe a little bit more in the first half, but it's not like it was so crazy heavily weighted to the first half versus the second. You just had those mistakes in the second half that you didn't have in the first half. And it was kind of a perfect storm of all of that together. Purdy, not his best game, not close to his best game. Was it his worst game of the season? Maybe. It was certainly up there. Was it Kyle Shanahan's most confusing game of the season? Maybe. It was certainly up there. Jordan Mason's only time he's lost a fumble. All of that together, it's how you get no points in the second half. But what you were talking about earlier, Kyle, talking about the game as a whole, or the team as a whole, it's hard to really point at just one thing. I feel the same way about the offense, because I feel good about how they're moving the ball, but you can't finish drives, and now you're turning the ball over. You're not going to win games that way. I am so incredibly concerned by the red zone offense. You and I talked about it along with Sterling week number one when they're celebrating a double-digit win against the Jets, and we got called crazy. They put up 31 on the best defense in the NFL. How could you be saying anything other than, oh my God, this team is awesome? It has been consistent for 5 games now, and 5 games of an NFL season, that's more than a quarter of the season. This is officially a problem, and I'm not so sure that McCaffrey in here is going to magically make it go away. They will certainly be better if and when he does come back, but this feels like more of who they are this year as opposed to whether they're just missing one player.
Yeah, it's two things. It's the red zone offense. It's not the offense as a whole. Like, let's make that clear. They're 6.3 yards per play for the season, which is tied for second in the league.
Like, their Washington advanced metrics are still incredibly good. It makes no sense.
They're outrageous. But here's the kicker. So, they're missing one kicker. Here's the other kicker.
Shout out Matthew Wright. He's the new kicker.
Love Matthew Wright. Big fan. They are tied for second in the league in turnovers, like giveaways.
Yeah.
That's a significant problem when your margin for error has been whittled down by the injuries that they've sustained. That's a problem. Kansas City, for what it's worth, the Niners have 8 turnovers. Kansas City also has 8 turnovers. Just by the way, fun stat. But they've come up with these just like backbreaking turnovers, right? Yeah, the Jordan Mason fumble and the Brock Purdy interceptions at the end of the game. This past week, you have a Brock Purdy fumble against Minnesota and another interception against Minnesota in a close game that were backbreaking. So it's the turnover problem for sure. And then it's that red zone scoring. And that's where I do think Christian McCaffrey can help a lot, is helping them find the end zone. But the bigger problem is, man, you've got minimum 3 more games without Christian McCaffrey. You can't, we talked about it all the first segment. You don't have enough runway here to let this go on another 3 weeks. Because if you do that against Kansas City, you're going to lose. You do that against Dallas, you're probably going to lose. Shoot, you do that against Seattle, you might lose. So they have to, that's the thing they have to figure out. And once they do, all of a sudden the turnover stuff, yeah, you know what? Maybe less of an issue, because instead of being up 6-0, they're up 14-0. You know, so that's where the offensive stuff is tough, because it, as a collective, as a whole, you're like, wow, you know what? Pretty good little start to the year, especially considering they didn't have Debo and Kittle for one game. Christian McCaffrey's been out the entire year. Okay, the advanced metrics and the yards per play numbers are good, but man, turnovers and red zone scoring. I know that's like the thing, right? Like if you go three keys to the game, almost every game you're looking at, you got to score in the red zone and you got to win the turnover battle. They're doing neither of those things.
You turn on like a random college football broadcast, two guys on a network you haven't ever heard of, and you get their keys to the game, and just invariably they will always be converting your red zone opportunities and winning the turnover battle.
Yeah. Physicality.
Yeah. Being able to run establish the run early. Oh. That's one. Another one.
I did think it was interesting that Lo Neal said today on this very station, should be Hall of Famer Lorenzo mm-hmm. Neal. Let's get him a gold jacket. I did think it was interesting that he talked about the lack of physicality from the 49ers, because I've kind of noticed that too. It feels like they've gotten punched in the mouth a couple of times this year in a way we haven't really seen them get punched in the mouth in the last half decade.
Yeah, I thought the Lo Neal interview with Willard and Dibbs was awesome. And if you missed it, download the free Odyssey app, search Willard and Dibbs. You can also check it out on YouTube, youtube.com/957thegame. I think it was in the same answer. He said essentially, opponents don't fear them right now. Like the mm-hmm. Niners used to put the fear of God in opponents. And I don't necessarily mean that literally, but they would just wear you down with their mm-hmm. physicality. And in second halves, you get into a point where the opponent's been on the field for 35 minutes of the game, the defense has been on the field for 35 minutes of the game, and you've got McCaffrey or Jordan Mason or whoever, even Elijah Mitchell or Raheem Mostert back in the day, running downhill behind Trent Williams or Joe Staley, as it was when Raheem Mostert was doing his damage. Like, you are getting bigger chunks in the second halves as opposed to in first halves. And you got Debo Samuel and Trent Williams coming out with the boom box, and you kind of felt like you have every eye in the building on you, even from the opposing teams. The Niners haven't really come out with that kind of swagger, it feels like. And I think Lowe's on to something there. There isn't right now that fear that opponents feel when playing the 49ers, because through five games, they haven't really, maybe aside from week one, and you can maybe say week four against the Patriots, but that's more, I think, of who the Patriots are versus what the 49ers did. You haven't really had that moment where you can just feel the opponent's will breaking. You felt that a little bit week one, but that was a common theme for the Niners last year. Mm-hmm. And you haven't really felt it for much of this season at all, aside from maybe week one.
I thought you started to feel it in week three, which is why I proclaimed to everybody at 95.7 that the game was over, when it very clearly wasn't. But you did. You started to feel it. All of a sudden, holding penalty gets them into first and 20, and now everything kind of goes downhill from there. And I thought you saw it on the drive where Jordan Mason fumbled. It was like, oh man, the Cardinals are done. The Niners are just gonna run this all the way in.
Even though it was ugly that entire second half, you still kind of felt like, well, they'll be okay. This is still who they are. They can still just run out the clock, and there's nothing the Cardinals can do to stop it.
Yeah, and then turnover and the game changes. The 49ers to me this year feel like the guy who graduated 2 years ago and goes back to campus wearing his Letterman jacket. Everyone's just kind of like,
What are you doing here, bro?
What are you doing? Like, that's not cool anymore. And that's kind of how it feels this year. Is, hey, this is supposed to be the big, this is supposed to be the team that's stuffing people in lockers, and it's like, oh no, he's kind of balding now. Oh, and his facial hair is kind of ratty.
Called the Niners old and tired, or what?
Yeah, kind of. Like, that's legit. That's just how it, that's the vibe I'm kind of getting from this team this year. Is, man, they're trying to reach back and throw a pitch that they just don't have anymore. And that's where it's like, all right, it's on the coaching staff to learn a new pitch and do something different, because whatever they used to do hasn't been working this year with this group.
Are you talking about the graduate of 2 years prior going back to wherever his younger friends frequent or whatever? It made me think of, do you remember after Kevin Durant left the Warriors? This must have been So after the 2019 season, leading into the 1920 season, and that was a disaster year for the Warriors, I think it was that offseason, or maybe it was opening night that year. It was Warriors, Clippers, and the Clippers at that point were like the talk of the NBA because they had Paul George and Kawhi and all that. And Patrick Beverley says reportedly to Steph, like, you had the last 4 years and the next 4 years are mine, right? Like, Patrick Beverley is the rest of the NFL. And ultimately, Patrick Beverley was proven to be very, very, very wrong. And maybe that's what will happen as well when the Niners get McCaffrey back. But it feels like the rest of the NFL maybe is saying to the Niners, you had your fun. Unfortunately for you, you didn't win a Super Bowl in the time being. But your window's closing now. We're not scared of you anymore. And we're coming at you. And look, you're 2-3. Losses to the Rams and the Cardinals. Your best is in the rearview mirror, bud.
That's kind of, and that's part of, I think, why there's, it feels like there's so much urgency this year, and so much I don't want to say panic, but for the lack of a better term, panic this year, is because, man, that Super Bowl hangover, that idea, that thought just lingers there, right? And the 2020 season, like, everybody remembers that so vividly. All the injuries and stuff early in the year is just a bad year. And that's just kind of hanging there, lingering. And it's really hard to shake that feeling. And it's really hard to shake, like, man, this just, they had a really good run. Their run from 2019 through 2023, a five-year window, where the only year you weren't in the NFC title game was a year where you were literally too banged up to be there. And even that year, you were still in the playoff race until like week 15.
You definitely outperformed what you should have done with those injuries, no doubt.
Right, yeah. Right. So that's the other, that's the thing that kind of sits in the back of my mind too, is and the reason I feel this like urgency this year that I may not have felt in 2021 or 2022 is, hey, maybe it's just, this is the end of the window. Maybe this is just what this is. Maybe this is that Warriors Lakers series in 2023, where it's just like, oh, this group just doesn't have it anymore.
That's a scary thought, because you're also about to sign your franchise quarterback to a deal. And this is something that Mark Willard has said, and I agree with him, although I can't necessarily say I share how he feels about what it will look or feel like once Brock Purdy gets that contract. But generally, Kyle, you sign a quarterback to that major deal, you do it with a smile on your face, knowing that your window is open for as long as he's still the guy. But given how it's going this year, while he's still on a major discount deal, the prospect of signing him to that major contract isn't as happy of a thing to think about. Not necessarily because I don't believe in Brock Purdy, but because, well, if it looks like this right now, even while he's on the team-friendly deal, what will it look like 2, 3, 4 years from now when you're years into that contract and you aren't able to pay the rest of these guys the same amount of money?
Yeah, I will say though, for this year, with all the stuff that's been going on, I think Brock's been, for the most part, really good.
Yep, I agree.
And it's a key reason that their offense is, like we just talked about, like, man, you look at all the advanced numbers, all the yards per play, all the things, like, they're still, man, it's still pretty good. They're still not bad. They have some tweaking to do long term. And look, this season is not over. There are 17 games. There are 13 more weeks of this. They could very easily turn up 11-6, 12-5, and we're going, hey, remember when they were 2-3 and we were all freaking out? Like, that's 100%. That's on the table, and it's partly because of Brock. But honestly, like, I think it would be worse if they had even Jimmy Garoppolo back there this year.
Oh,
I think
no
it'd be
doubt.
Kind of significantly worse.
No doubt. Absolutely.
So that gives me a little bit of optimism that even if this window with this very specific group of players has closed, again, not say, I don't know, there's 13 weeks left, but even if it has, I feel really good about the future because of Brandon Ayuk, because of Brock Purdy, because of Fred Warner and Nick Bosa. Like, there's still a good core that can take you into a new window if this one is in fact over.
Yeah. Speaking of Fred Warner, and we got a few minutes, I want to close it out with this. Did you hear what he had to say earlier today in the locker room as the team's getting ready for Thursday Night Football, Kyle?
No, I didn't.
He was asked, I think, about, you know, as the leader of the team, you're kind of maybe tasked with motivating. Do you deliver like a pregame speech to try to get the team fired up along those sorts of lines? And here's what the Niners linebacker had to say.
You know, I'm kind of at the point where it's like the circumstance is what it is. We're 2-3 going into a Thursday night game against a divisional rival, prime time, with the stakes of being number one in the division. It's like, if I have to give some sort of grandiose speech to get you going for this moment, probably don't have the right guys.
That's an interesting line there. I don't think this means that he feels like he has to do that. He's just saying, if I have to do it, it's a bad sign. I'm not sure he's telling on anybody here. But from the outside in, looking in, it kind of feels like the team might need that sort of speech to light their butts on fire. But Fred Warner saying, if I have to do that, it might not even be worth it, because you should be fired up plenty on your own. You don't need me to do this for you.
Well, right, and that's what, like, you hear somebody say something about the other team during the Super Bowl, like Super Bowl media day. Someone says, oh, I think Patrick Mahomes is overrated. And everyone's like, why would you say that? Like, you think Patrick Mahomes need bulletin board material to be fired up for a Super Bowl? So I get what Fred's saying, and I 100% agree with him, man. I also agree with you in that I don't think he's calling anyone out specifically. He didn't say, there's some guys in here that need to be fired up or need motivation or whatever. He didn't say that. I just think he's saying, man, if they need me, given everything we know going into this game, we all recognize the stakes. We all know that you got to win this game. This is must win. I think D'Amador Lenore called it must win. If any Fred Warner to tell you that, let next man up. You can stay home.
Yeah. I agree. But I'm sure that's going to be something we're going to hear talked about all day tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game. Yep. Before we get out of here, Kyle, you want some good news?
I would love some good news.
The Dodgers scored in the first inning against the Padres, but the Padres have since put up 6 unanswered. So 6-1 Padres,
boys,
over the Dodgers.
Come on, Pods.
Game 3 of the NLDS. I know Giants fans. Most of those also Niner fans. So hopefully all of you out there listening, happy to hear that. 6-1 Padres down in San Diego over the Dodgers right now. The Dodgers, though, are threatening with the bases loaded, then one out. But hopefully the Padres can dance out of danger there. Kyle, it's been a pleasure as always. I'll talk to you again in 2 days when we bring you a special Thursday night edition of Overtime along with Sterling. Should be a lot of fun. Until then, have a good night, man. Good to talk to you.
Can't wait, Mark. See ya.
Yeah, that'll be fun coming up on Thursday after Niners and Seahawks in Seattle. But we'll talk later. That's Kyle. My name's Mark Granny. Thanks so much for tuning in. Make sure to tap in tomorrow as we continue to get ready for Niners and Seahawks here on 95.7 The Game. This has been the Football Hour. We're back Friday for more Football Hour, I suppose, because the Niners play on Thursday. That's coming up later as we continue here on 95.7 The Game. Have a good night.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.